Hi.
Hello.
Welcome back to the Bitchery of History. Here we are again, Max and Allison.
Hello. We're recording in your apartment this time.
We are indeed. Welcome to my place, everyone.
Thanks. It's nice driving to North Hollywood. The 101 was completely empty. It was great.
Oh, fabulous. Yeah. Today, I am starting off, and I am going to talk to you about Shirley Chisholm.
She's
great. She's great. My interest in her actually began a while ago. I don't remember how old I was, but my dad was watching a documentary on PBS, and I was watching it with him just a little bit. I had come into the room, and I saw this African-American woman on newsreel footage from, of course, like way back in the olden days, and she was talking about how she was running for president, and I was like, whoa.
Oh, yeah.
Who is this woman? And it's always kind of stayed in the back of my mind. For many, many years, and so I was excited to have the opportunity to research her more and find out more about her, because I've always kind of thought, oh yeah, that Shirley Chisholm person, she was really awesome.
Yeah.
And really spoke so passionately about what she believed in and followed her heart and her dreams and got a lot of stuff done. Today, I'm mostly going to be sharing some really cool stories that I found about her.
That's fantastic. I remember you texted me a little bit about it when you decided last week that you were going to do her. And just from like the couple texts in all caps that I got.
Yes.
I'm very excited.
I think she's going to be your new hero, basically. Quick overview. She was born in Brooklyn, New York. And then she spent a lot of her early childhood actually in the Caribbean islands with her grandparents. Then she came back to the United States. She went to school. She then graduated. She was teaching school in New York and was very active in education and believing education, you know, as a universal right. So then she was part of the New York State Assembly. She ran for that. And then she decided to run for Congress.
Dang.
And everyone was kind of like, hey, what are you doing? And she just said, you know, somebody has to do it.
Somebody's got to do it, right.
It's going to be me.
Do you know what year that was? That's fantastic in and of itself.
Yeah, let's see. June 1968, actually. Her campaign slogan was unbought and unbossed.
Dang. Sounds like someone running for president today.
Exactly. So she thereby became the first black woman elected to Congress.
Dang.
I watched some great interviews with her. She's just so charismatic and so passionate about everything that she believes in. And so she was sharing a few stories about her first days in Congress, where obviously she may not have been the most welcome of figures. And she said that there was a place in the Capitol building, I suppose, somewhere in D.C. that a lot of the congressmen and senators would go and get lunch. And so she went down there to get lunch one day. But what she didn't realize was that every state, every delegation had a special table.
Okay.
So, and she knew that no one wanted to sit with her because not only was she a woman, she was also black.
Right.
It's 1968. She knew she was going to have to sit by herself, which she was actually fine with. She said, I brought the New York Times every day. Like, she's just, every cloud has a silver lining.
Exactly.
So she's sitting at a table all by herself, and she said, this man comes up to her and says, excuse me, you're sitting at the Georgia delegation table. And so she was so confused, and she just looked at him and said, excuse me? She said, you know, she couldn't hardly understand his accent. He had a very strong Southern accent. And finally she said, you know, I realized I was only going to win him with charm and with love and with smiles. And so she said, I just looked at him. I said, you're hungry, aren't you? And he said, yeah, I'm hungry. And you're sitting at my table and this and that. So she told him, go buy your lunch. There's a table over there that's totally empty. Go sit at that table. And if anybody gives you trouble, you tell them to come talk to Shirley Chisholm. Which is just so brilliant. So brilliant. I mean, what grace.
It's about the best line she could have given him.
Right. Then she said there was also someone in Congress who, she said, every time she would come in to the House, they would just start coughing so much. And she said she finally turned to someone one day and said, I mean, is anybody going to do anything about that poor man? Like, I think he has TB. I think he's dying. And they said, have you not noticed that he only coughs when you come in and when you walk past him to go to your seat? He spits in his handkerchief, and that's his way of spitting at you, essentially. And she goes, I'm going to solve this.
Oh, so, I see.
So okay. The next day, she walks in, And this man starts hacking and coughing, and she just keeps on walking her way. And she said, right when she gets to him and he gets out his handkerchief to spit in it, she pulls out her man's handkerchief that she went and bought and spits in it at the same time. And she said, all the reporters up in the gallery lost it. They were laughing so hard, which is great. So this is all her time in Congress.
Dang. Where I really, just, I have this image in my head of her sitting in that cafeteria and just kind of like raising the table up and going, I don't see your name on it.
Yeah. Who?
Where does it say Georgia?
Who knows? Who knows? So clearly during her time in Congress, she'd gain a lot of supporters, a lot of friends, even though she obviously still couldn't please everyone.
Of course.
It is, you know, the early 70s.
Right.
But people convinced her, hey, you should run for president.
I'm in love with her.
So you have the first woman running for president. You have the first African American running for president in 1972.
Talk about glass ceilings.
Shattering. Just shattering.
Punching
them
down.
So she did well in some of the primaries. Obviously, she didn't get the nomination or get elected president. But what stood out to me, and what even I remember from watching that documentary years ago, is she always was saying, all we see running for president is white men, white men, white men.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody has to change that. And why not me? Which is just, such a good quote. And her whole campaign was pretty much education, very strong in education, on welfare, really a very strong democratic platform, essentially. Now, what's really an interesting story that she, again, was telling in some of these interviews that I was watching was George Wallace was shot. There was an attempted assassination on him, and he ended up in the hospital. And she said, George Wallace always liked me, which she could never really figure out why, because he was from a southern state. And if you Google George Wallace, the first pictures that come up is him standing in front of a Confederate flag, this white man.
Fantastic. My favorite kind of flag.
Of course. Of course. So she said, I could never really figure out why he liked me. But when he was shot, she decided to go and visit him in the hospital, which sent everyone into a tailspin, everyone into a tizzy. You can't go visit him in the hospital. You're running against him. It's going to be terrible. And she said, it's the human thing to do.
Right.
I'm going to visit him in the hospital.
I'm a human being at this
moment.
Yeah,
screw all of you. Screw all of you. Exactly. So she goes and visits him. And she said, you know, he's lying there in the bed, tubes and all hooked up to all these things. And he just said, Charlie, what are you doing here? And she said exactly what you said. You know, I'm here as a human being. This is the right thing that I should be doing. You are sick. You are a friend. And I am visiting you.
I'm about to start crying.
She's so inspirational. And that's basically her story. She really was just a powerful, passionate speaker. She then became a lecturer. She continued. She went back to Congress after her failed presidential run. So served some more terms there. Became a teacher in her later years. But I just love all of her quotes, basically, are just incredible. And I know we're going to do some quotes later, but I just have to share favorites now, because as I was reading them, I sent you so many,
right.
But I was blowing up your phone because they're so great. She said, the one thing you've got going, your one vote. Tremendous amounts of talent are lost to our society just because that talent wears a skirt. In the end, anti-black, anti-female, and all forms of discrimination are equivalent to the same thing, anti-humanism.
Yes.
A personal favorite, and that I think I'll end on in... Let you teach me about someone, is be as bold as the first man or woman to eat an oyster.
Those are words to lift.
For real.
I don't get oysters, first of all. Like, as a little side note, however, I don't get them. I don't get the
Like, as animals?
As, no,
I don't.
My dad, once we were at Bonefish, he put an oyster on my plate. He was like, this is for you. And I said, I don't want it.
So that's Shirley Chisholm, trailblazer, all-around inspirational gal.
She reminds me, she feels to me like the physical embodiment. There's this quote that I love, and it says, there are those who say to God, thy will be done.
Mm-hmm.
And there are those to whom God says, all right, then have it your way.
Mm.
And I kind of just feel like that's, she's like the physical embodiment of that.
I love that. I love that.
I will be talking this week about Claudette Colvin.
Okay.
The woman who was almost Rosa Parks.
Ooh.
So Claudette Colvin was born on September 5th, 1939 in Montgomery, Alabama. And on March 2nd, 1955, at the tender age of 15 years old, Claudette was on her way home from school with three of her other friends. And they were sitting on the bus, and this white woman gets on and demands that they give up their seat because the bus is packed. Mm-hmm. So her two friends go, oh, okay. And Claudette goes, you know, you're tired. I'm tired. So why don't you just sit? Not exactly those words, but like, basically, I'm not getting up. I'm tired. You're tired. There's a spot. Just sit. And she, the white lady refuses, makes this big commotion. The driver pulls the bus over and says, you either get up or I'm calling the cops. And Claudette says, I'm not getting up. Mm. And they call the cops. This happens 9 months before Rosa Parks is arrested for the exact same thing.
Wow.
So the NAACP is flooded with letters in support of Colvin. And they were received by the secretary at that time of the NAACP, who was Rosa Parks.
What?
Right? So Rosa Parks pays a personal visit to Claudette Colvin, and they become best friends to the point where every time Claudette Colvin would travel to go to an NAACP meeting, mm-hmm. she would stay at Rosa Parks' house. They were that close to each other. So a couple months later, the president of the NAACP comes up with a plan that they need to have a bus boycott because they're tired of it. And they say, you know, we should use the arrest of Claudette Colvin as a response, you know, this is what we're responding to. But they were worried, after a lot of talking, they were worried that because Claudette was so dark-skinned, that a lot of the white people at the time wouldn't feel for her.
Oh my God.
And so they sent Rosa Parks to sit on the bus instead and do the exact same thing.
It's a conspiracy theory.
And it wasn't, I mean... I don't think that they meant to like discredit anything.
No, of course not.
But they were just playing, the best cards that they could.
Of course.
But Claudette doesn't find out about it until they started a flyer campaign where the goal was to get a flyer into the hand of every single African American person in Montgomery. Mm-hmm. And Claudette finds out that they are boycotting the buses in response to Rosa Parks' arrest, which is something that she had done 9 months earlier. So while Rosa Parks, who was arrested on December 1st, 1955, becomes the face of the Montgomery bus boycott, when they go in to do the court challenge for it, there's a lot of technicalities to her case that cause it to get stuck in Alabama state courts. Mm-hmm. Whereas Claudette Colvin's case, who for some reason, I don't really know the specifics of it, but what I do know is that Claudette Colvin's case was a lot more attractive to the lawyers who were putting the case together because hers could go directly to federal court, which meant that the local Montgomery courts couldn't be as controlling over it. It's also worth noting, I forgot to mention this, that not only did they not pick Claudette Colvin because she was dark-skinned, she'd also become pregnant. So it was, she's dark-skinned and she's an unwed mother. So Claudette Colvin, along with three other women, another teenager, one of the other girls who was with her on the bus, and two elderly ladies and a 45-year-old housewife, become the main plaintiffs in this case, Browder versus Gale. Browder is the housewife. She's the 45-year-old. She was chosen to be the named plaintiff because she was the 45-year-old one. She wasn't a teenager. She wasn't really old. Mm-hmm. But Claudette is the star witness because they can't use Rosa Parks' case, so they're using Claudette Colvin's case. Mm-hmm. And she has the most direct case that was dragged off a bus.
Right.
And so on June 13th, 1956, the district court ruled that, and this is, quote, the enforced segregation of black and white passengers on motor buses operating in the city of Montgomery violates the Constitution and the laws of the United States. Hmm. And so by November, the Supreme Court, because of course the state freaked out and the city of Montgomery freaked out, the other name, the defendant in the case, Gale, Browder versus Gale, is actually the mayor of Montgomery defending the city.
Wow.
And they take it all the way to the Supreme Court.
Whew.
And on November 13th, 1956, the Supreme Court upheld the decision and ordered Montgomery to desegregate their buses, made segregation on buses completely illegal. So she has this big moment. Unfortunately, though, because of the notoriety from the case, for actually both her and Rosa Parks, it became incredibly difficult for them to live in Montgomery. It became incredibly difficult to them to live really anywhere in the country. And so 2 years after the decision comes out about the case, she moved to New York City. Her and her son and her second son, which she had shortly after she moved to New York City, they had to live with her sister for a while. She couldn't find work anywhere. It took her, I think, like a year and a half to 2 years to finally get a job in a nursing home where she worked at for 35 years. She retired in 2004 and she's still alive today.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I think it's just, it's incredible that this is a name that's not known.
Right.
Because, I mean, the whole point of us doing this podcast, obviously, is to go and say, hey, you should know about all these cool women. Mm-hmm. It's almost disappointing in a way to think that, oh, well, we all know about Rosa Parks and we all know that story. But to find out that there was another young girl who
15
without any prior knowledge really decided to do this, whereas Rosa Parks almost is taking the cue from this 15-year-old and what bravery. And
it is a very brave moment. She does talk in some of the interviews that I've watched about her. She talks about how her school did an entire month for Black History. It used to be when she was growing up, they would only do a week for Black History, but her school did an entire month. Mm. And she gets arrested in March. And Black History Week was still in February, just like it is today. So she was spurred on by these. Right.
That's really cool. And that just goes so much to show you how important it is to have diverse education.
A balanced education.
And to know where you come from. I was speaking with my roommate today about just sort of knowing your history and your identity. And when you have a lack of that and you don't seem to have these people to look up to, that's when schools and education need to come into play.
Exactly. I would also like to make one more note before we end. The case was won on the back of the 14th Amendment. Personally, thank you.
You're welcome.
Personally, my favorite amendment of the Constitution.
Tell us why, Max.
The 14th Amendment contains within it the Equal Rights Clause, which says that your rights, my rights, Claudette Colvin's rights cannot be taken away just because I don't like you.
Fabulous. Share some quotes.
My two favorite quotes from Claudette Colvin. She said, "I knew then, and I know now, that when it comes to justice, there is no easy way to get it. You can't sugarcoat it. You have to take a stand and say, that's not right." And I did. And then the second one, and this is just like, I got chills when I read this. And she said, "I felt like Sojourner Truth was pushing down on one soldier and Harriet Tubman was pushing down on the other saying, sit down, girl. I was glued to my seat." I got chills just then saying
it. I love it. I said some of my quotes earlier, but I will share a few more facts on Shirley Chisholm, some firsts. She joined in 1971 the Congressional Black Caucus as one of its founding members, and also that same year was a founding member of the National Women's Political Caucus.
Yes.
Last year, in November 2015, Chisholm was posthumously awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom by President Barack Obama at a ceremony in the White House.
That's fantastic.
Yep. You wouldn't have Barack Obama without Shirley Chisholm. You wouldn't even have Hillary Clinton.
No.
Because she said, all we keep seeing are white men, and it's got to be something different.
I really do love her. You were right.
I know. I said this woman's going to be your new hero. So speaking of woman versus female, you want to have to define some terms today?
As we move into our terms to define for today, I want to talk about the difference between woman and female.
So I looked in the dictionary. Female is defined as anything relating to a species that can, or part of a species that can, lay eggs or give birth to young.
Right.
If you look up woman, however, it says a female human, a human being, and a
this
person.
This is the point that I want to talk about. And it's kind of like meaning to talk about Macintosh apples and Granny Smith apples, but accidentally talking about oranges and apples.
Ooh.
They're both fruits.
Right.
They both kind of get at the point, but they're not the same thing. They don't come from the same tree.
Right. They're not the same level of respect.
It's not the same level of respect. And to a certain extent, you literally dehumanize a person when you call them female instead of woman.
That reminds me of a great quote that I saw somebody post somewhere, and I don't know who to give credit to for it. But it said, we should stop telling men to respect women because they are their sisters, mothers, wives, daughters. And we should start telling them to respect them because they are human. I think that's a great point.
Yeah.
Just a reminder that
right. We
are human beings too.
And it's just one.
Oh my God. Sorry. Time out.
Please.
Oh man. Did I tell you about, I overheard this conversation the other day, which really gets at your point. This guy was saying, you know, if I ever have a kid or, you know, if I have a daughter and I wanted to go, I'm sorry. Did you just define daughter as being different than a kid? Because I think that you did. And I think that you meant to as well. I don't think that was a slip of the tongue. I think what it is that he somehow felt the need to say...
To differentiate. Right.
Having a kid with having a daughter.
Yeah, I think it says something to how we raise our younger generations.
Yes.
When those kind of distinctions are automatic or they happen subconsciously. The difference between women and female being, I think, a very subconscious thing.
Yes.
In society today.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I think the subconscious things are the things that we have the most trouble with.
And the most trouble changing, for sure.
Right. Just something to think about. Just put it in the back of your head.
So you are going to be listening to this and loving it, hopefully, on February 22nd or sometime that week.
Yes, ma'am.
So we've got some great things that happened the week of February 22nd. February 26, 1987, the Church of England voted to allow the ordination of female priests.
Milestones.
February 27th.
On February 27th, 1872, Charlotte Ray, the first African-American lawyer, graduated from Howard Law School.
Wow, 1872. That's incredible.
Honestly, it's earlier than I thought.
That's what I mean. Which is kind of, maybe it's sad that it's incredible.
Maybe we need to look at her.
I like that.
Future podcast. I thought this one was interesting. On February 27th, 1972, so 100 years after Charlotte Ray became the first African-American lawyer, the word Miss, M-S, period, was first included in U.S. government official printing style books.
That's really cool. I always select Miss on the drop down.
Me too.
Oh man, we hope you have enjoyed learning some new things and
spending
some time with
us. More badass bitches from history.
More badass bitches. So if you are liking it, subscribe. We'll let you know when a new episode is out. We should be bringing you one every week.
Every Monday.
Yep.
We are now available on Stitcher, iTunes, and Podomatic, both on your computer and from the App Store. iTunes is not available on Android phones, if you did not know that.
Aww.
But you can get Stitcher, and you can get Podomatic.
Great, and you can review us, which would be great.
Please, we would
love
it.
Let us know if you have any suggestions for people that we should look at, that you want to tell the world about. We can help you spread that message.
We would love to hear not only about women from history you think the world should know about on a big scale, but we also really want to know about those stories of women who made big changes locally, who made big changes in families, who overcame great obstacles in order to bring their families through something, to bring themselves to something. The local heroes.
Absolutely.
The local badass bitches.
Yes. And that you can also write about on our Facebook wall if you'd like.
Please never forget.
Bitches get stuff done.